It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, and welcome to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host this evening, Paul J. McSorley, filling in for Steve Taylor. I'm also the host and narrator of Fear from the Heartland, a podcast now in its seventh season, with dozens of episodes available for your listening pleasure. So, once tonight's tale has had its way with you, I hope you'll take a little time to seek out my program as well. Tonight's story is a grim descent into grief, obsession, and the terrible things people will do in the name of love. As morning curdles into suspicion, what begins as a desperate act of remembrance may lead one grieving man somewhere far darker than closure. Want to know what happens? Stay tuned. Settle in and dim the lights. The show is about to begin. Before we get into tonight's feature, however, we'd like to thank our dedicated supporters in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights patrons area. For just $7.99 per month, members enjoy ad-free listening, early access to new episodes, exclusive content, and full access to our complete archive, with discounted annual options available too. That opens the door to a sprawling library of audio horrors stretching back more than a decade, with chilling releases and classic episodes reaching all the way to 2012. To find out more or join today, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. Thank you for helping us keep the darkness burning month after month. Featured tonight, courtesy of Velox Books, tonight's tale is written by Ambrose Ibsen, performed by Jeff Sturtevant, featuring Larry Ketter, with production by Drew Blood. And if you'd like more from Ambrose Ibsen, be sure to check out his newest release, What Gathers at Dusk, Haunting Tales of Horror and the Supernatural, now available on Amazon.com in hardcover, paperback, audiobook, and Kindle ebook formats. And now, without further delay, I present to you, from author Ambrose Ibsen, Eating Alicia Morrison.
They found her face down in the earth. After a whole lot of pestering, the cops took me to the exact spot. Right to the place where my girlfriend of 11 years, Alicia Morrison, was dumped by an unknown assailant. It was a boggy area, overgrown with poison sumac, half flooded from March to early September, and home to just about every insect you can think of. You can't drive over this stuff, meaning the guy who killed my beloved must have parked along the highway shoulder and carried her a mile and a half before dumping her in the fen. Had some nerdy plant collector not pass through the area at just the right time, it's likely Alicia's body would never have been found. She was in a poor state when the cops got there. Badly decomposed, half digested by the local fauna. A matter-of-fact patrolman told me that when they first happened upon her body, it was so covered in flies and other wriggling pests, they nearly missed her. So, a few days after the funeral, I finally made it out there. I don't know why I insisted so much, why I just had to be there, but I felt the visit was gravely important. I needed closure, and could think of no other place to get it. Of course, standing there in the bog after the cops took off, staring into a buggy puddle by myself, I felt nothing of the sort. The heat was unbearable as I walked around and around the shallow pit. No matter how long I lingered there, I could make no sense of the insensible, find no balm for my spirit. I had a lot of mourning left to do, but it fast became clear that this wasn't an ideal spot to meditate on my loss. Human beings are superstitious and sentimental creatures. I wanted, needed something to remember her by, however small. Alicia and I had been thinking of marrying when death stole her away, and I still wasn't sure how I'd carry on without her. A reminder of her, an emotional crutch, was a desperate necessity. For that reason, I took an empty soda bottle out of the car and filled it with bog water. Water from the very spot where she'd been found. Under the circumstances, taking a little part of the site with me seemed the best I could do, even if it was strange. With my memento in tow, I walked back to my car and drove off, utterly grief-stricken. That should have been the end of it. I should have spent days and weeks mourning Alicia and tending to my broken heart. In the hours after I returned home, that's exactly what my evening looked like. But that night, as I tossed and turned in a delirium of anger and sadness, something happened that forever altered the course of the whole affair. Prior to bed, I had sat up looking at the bottle of bog water under the light of my nightstand lamp. The detritus-rich stuff had brimmed with life. Aquatic insects and other critters were many, and my study of them had proven a pleasant, if momentary, distraction. Sometime before dawn, however, I made the critical error of confusing said bottle of bog water for my bottle of nightly drinking water, and without realizing it, drank down half of the infested liquid in a parched gulp. My reaction was one of violent illness, of course. I put on my light and began retching. I clawed dry stems and bits of gravel from my tongue and tried to put the image of swamp critters swimming around in my gut out of my head. When the threat of nausea passed, however, and my shock had equalized back into the dreariness that was then my standard, I had a big laugh. And more than that, in a fit of seeming madness, I guzzled down the remainder. Perhaps in my agitated state, I thought it perfectly fine to drink the water. It was foul stuff, yes, tasted miserable, and likely brought with it myriad pathogens. On the other hand, my beloved's corpse had partially dissolved in that same water. The things living in it had feasted upon her. By partaking in it myself, I had unwittingly attained a posthumous closeness with Alicia that I had never expected. This realization, that I now had traces of her in me, no matter how slight, was enough to soothe my sour mood, and I passed off to sleep not 20 minutes after draining the bottle. A most curious thing happened in the hours before dawn. I was plagued by dreams. Not my own, however. The visions that came to me were those of another mind, another time. When I awoke, I felt reasonably sure that I'd hallucinated everything, but I could say now with certainty that there was no mistake. My initial instinct was correct. Having consumed the bog water, and every iota of Alicia persisting within it, I was treated to a parade of her memories. I saw Alicia's 10th birthday party, saw the gifts and cake that her mother brought out amidst the mess of banners. I was serenaded by the partygoers, experiencing every sensation as only Alicia herself could have experienced it. I had the impression that I myself had lived this, had been present for it, though I knew I hadn't been. Alicia had been 19 when we'd first met. I had a vision of an argument she'd had with a high school friend, and another of a class trip to the art museum in middle school. I took in the Titians and the Caravaggios just as she'd done, as though the two of us had shared one mind, one pair of eyes. There's no rational explanation for what occurred that night. By ingesting trace amounts of Alicia, I'd somehow ingested her essence, her memories. frankly, I had no interest in trying to explain it. All I knew was that I had to acquire more of it. Alicia was gone, but in this, we still shared a connection. Assessing the dissolved solids in a body of water is a work of scientists. Even for them, determining precisely what ratios of said solids are attributable to a corpse is probably impossible. Alicia's body had stewed in the bog for some weeks, bobbing in the drink like a noxious batch of sun tea, gradually sharing herself with the water and all its inhabitants. I drove back to the spot the next morning, finding conditions cooler and more pleasant. Hiking to the spot where the officers had previously led me, I knelt beside the muddy pool and cupped another dose of the water into my mouth. There were dead flies in it, bits of other insects and traces of plant life, but I swallowed it all the same. You may ask yourself how I managed to do so without vomiting, and I can only say that I forced it all down in the interest of sooner reconnecting with my beloved. These flies and insects had likely fed on her corpse. Thus, ingesting them in the brew despite my reservations was as natural as taking vitamins. With a belly full of sloshing water, I returned to my car and rolled down the windows, opting to take a short rest behind the wheel. It wasn't long before the pleasant breeze lulled me, and the quietness of the stretch allowed sleep to return in force. And this time, again, it brought with it visions. They were sharper than before, clearer and more detailed. They were not all pleasant to me, however. They were old memories of sledding in the winter, followed by hot cocoa. I had a vision of the two of us on an early date, where we dined at an Italian restaurant and gone to the movies afterward. I relished the sensation of us holding hands, delighted in our laughter and smiles. There was one vision, though. A vision of Alicia with another man. Handsome, clean-cut. My age, though certainly not me. What started with a few guarded kisses ultimately ended up in the bedroom of her apartment. I recognized the fixtures, recognized the framed photo of Alicia and I on the nightstand. I did not recognize the man on top of her, however. Judging by the depth of that memory, it appears that my lover enjoyed the encounter. I was spared no detail. And when I awoke in the driver's seat, I was in a cold sweat, sick to my stomach, and not solely on account of the filthy water I'd swilled. Miserable and lonely, I had committed to this bizarre course in the hopes of reconnecting with my beloved Alicia. Instead, I'd inadvertently discovered an infidelity. She'd been cheating on me with this mystery man. I couldn't guess how long it had been going on, or whether she'd been planning to leave me for him before her untimely end. I also wasn't sure who he was. A co-worker of hers I'd never met? Some random match on a dating app? I'd never seen him before. That was just about the only thing I was sure of. I went shambling out of the car, hurt and confused. Who was this man? Had he had a hand in Alicia's death? How long had she strung me along, playing faithful and innocent? Returning to the bog, I was determined to get my answer. It took me the better part of 2 days to empty the slimy divot in the ground and process its writhing contents. The next 2 nights were packed with dream visions of the kind I've already described, most of them innocent and heartwarming. Alicia's family get-togethers, meetings at work, road trips with friends, concerts and plays. I was presented, too, with more mental footage of the mystery man. His fling with Alicia, it turned out, had not been brief. For a few seasons, at least. If one accounts for the weather from one vision to the next, they'd carried on behind my back in passionate abandon. Most of the encounters took place at Alicia's, likely on weekends when she'd claimed to be traveling for business. Fool that I'd been, I'd believed her. Had never thought to check up. Curiously, however, there were a couple of occasions when the trysts took place at the man's house. And having drunk liter after liter of corpse-rich water, I was presented with such neat and tidy visions of their meetings that I could begin to make out certain important details. I experienced a vision of Alicia driving down Waterman Street in the late autumn. I watched her pull her car into a driveway, the driveway of a house whose mailbox wore the numerals 414, with a mess of scraggly scrubs out front and a tall pine tree near its sidewalk. Living through Alicia's visions, I now knew where I could find the man. I didn't know his name, but I had his address firmly in mind. I weighed the possibility of paying him a visit, of revealing that I knew of their hookups. I considered investigating whether he'd had anything to do with Alicia's death. I ultimately decided to hop in my car and follow the same route Alicia had shown me in my dreams. I wanted to speak to the man, to give him a piece of my mind at least. But before doing so, I stopped and bought a gun. The house looks exactly the way it did in my dreams. The driveway's been repaved since their last booty call, and the pine is in need of a good trim. But the moment it enters into view, a shiver runs down my spine, and I feel like I've been there before. A deep breath. Kill the engine. I plant a firm knock on the door, then, after a few seconds, another. The man himself answers the summons. Handsome, yes, a little haggard. Has he been mourning too? I can't tell at a glance.
Can I help you?
He asks, looking me over curiously. Now that I'm here, I don't know what to do, what to say. I open my mouth and just blurt. I know about you and Alicia. His eyes go wide for a second. He seems taken aback. Then, probably putting two and two together, he shows some signs of shame.
Oh, man. You're the boyfriend, I take it?
I nod. He sighs. Runs his hand through his hair, sports an uncomfortable smile.
Listen, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah?
Look, when I first met her, I didn't know she was seeing anyone.
Right.
It was never my intention to step on your toes. Had I known, I wouldn't have gotten involved.
Right.
She was a wonderful girl.
She was.
And after everything that's happened...
He shakes his head.
It's a lot. Messed up world out there.
Yeah, it is. I point back to my car. Listen, can I show you something?
Huh?
Again, I motion to the car. Will you come with me for a bit? There's something I want to show you. Something I think you ought to see. His smile gets more uncomfortable. He isn't the least bit interested.
No thanks, man. Listen, I'm sorry about everything, but...
It's wrong of me to act like I'm giving him a choice. I pull the handgun out of my waistband and press it against his stomach. The muzzle is resting on his impressive abs, just like Alicia's head used to do after bouts of lovemaking. Car. Now. He isn't dumb enough to resist. He puts his hands up and tries to defuse this situation.
Whoa, dude. Come on. We can talk this out. Please, put that away.
Before he knows it, he's making these same appeals from my passenger seat as I'm speeding down the road. I hit 80 before I even make it to the highway. I keep one eye on him, my finger on the trigger, and the gun pointed at his center of mass while screaming down the fast lane. He's blathering, white in the face, and all I tell him is, "But there's something I gotta show you." Now we're there, on the side of the highway in the middle of nowhere. He's marching out in front of me, the gun pressed to the small of his back. He's got his head low like a prisoner of war, expecting the worst. Finally, we make it to the spot. "Look here," I say. "This is it."
"This is what?"
"This is where her body was dumped," I explain. "She was thrown into this ditch. It was full of water. Her body broke down. Cops almost didn't find it."
"Shit."
"I know you were screwing her," I continue, "but did you have anything to do with this?"
"What?"
he asks.
You're asking me if I murdered her?"
"That's right."
"No! No, of course not."
"You sure about that? You lying to me?"
"No! I cared for her, all right? I would never."
"You cared about her? Interesting."
"I mean it. I'm telling the truth here, man."
"All right," I reply. "Turn around. Nice and slow."
You believe me, right?"
He turns around, tears in his eyes, hands held high. By way of answer, I slot two rounds neatly into his forehead and watch his limp body topple into the soggy crevasse. Then, sitting down on the muddy ground, I wait. It's gonna take a while. The scenery is going to have to feed before I can get the answers I'm looking for. We're gonna need a bit of rain, too, before the process begins, and I can get his side of the story. There's plenty of time, though. The genius of this particular spot is that a body was only recently fished out of it. No one's gonna expect a new corpse here. Not now. When I can finally drink him in, then and only then will I know if he was telling the truth. This way he won't be able to lie to me. I'll see it all through his very eyes. Something I've learned far too late in life is that you can't always take people at their word. Sometimes you have to go the extra mile to keep them honest. Alicia taught me that.
You've just heard Eating Alicia Morrison, written by Ambrose Ibsen, performed by Jeff Sturtevant, featuring Larry Ketter, with production by Drew Blood. Our thanks once again to Velox Books for helping bring tonight's feature to our listeners. And if tonight's story left you eager for more from Ambrose Ibsen, be sure to seek out his newest release, What Gathers at Dusk, Haunting Tales of Horror and the Supernatural. Available now on Amazon.com in hardcover, paperback, audiobook, and Kindle ebook formats. In this chilling new collection, darkness takes root, hunger grows, and old things wake. A missing sister returns home after 8 years, but something about her is terribly wrong. Voices call from the deep woods in familiar tones that should not be there. A long-haul trucker finds that what he saw in the fields has followed him, and a vanished childhood friend may still be waiting inside an old bunker. These and other haunting tales offer a disturbing reminder that when the light fails, it is not only darkness that emerges, but everything that was waiting within it. Early readers have already responded with enthusiasm. One reviewer called it a great collection and praised the book's variety of horrors and unforgettable endings. And if you're looking for more eerie listening once tonight's performance has come to an end, I'd be honored if you checked out Fear from the Heartland, the show I host and narrate. We're now in our 7th season, with dozens of episodes available for your listening pleasure. There's no shortage of darkness waiting for you. Thanks for your support and for checking out my humble haunted part of the Chilling Tales Archives. And if you haven't already, please consider following Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, leaving us a 5-star rating or review, and sharing the show with a fellow fan of the macabre. You can find even more terrifying tales at creepypastastories.com and stay up to date with Evil Idol 2025 and all our latest releases by subscribing to our YouTube channel. And once you've finished tonight's show, I also hope you'll spend some time with Fear from the Heartland, now in its 7th season, with dozens of episodes ready and waiting for your listening pleasure. Memberships are available now at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where for just $7.99 per month, you'll receive ad-free listening, early access, exclusive content, and entry to our complete audio archive, with discounted annual options available and a vault of nightmares and dark delights extending all the way back to 2012. Follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. And as always, thank you for spending part of your night with us. And now, fellow lover of the macabre, I'm afraid our evening together draws to a close. You've been listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Until next time, I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, filling in for Steve Taylor, and host and narrator of Fear from the Heartland, reminding you to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.